The Guardian.
This Guardian podcast is supported by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that gives you the power of beautiful design. So you can do more than create a website, you can set yourself apart. To start your free trial, visit squarespace.com/guardian.
Football Weekly with James Richardson.
Today, drama at White Hart Lane. City continue to flag even while linesmen failed to do so as Spurs take big win. Pellegrini with no company on field but plenty now in the title race as Man United go top of the table and Arsenal are only 3 points behind. And what's this? Even little Chelsea with a battling point at New Look Newcastle. But hang on, here comes a Champions League midweek. Exciting continental clashes are plenty as Europe's best battle over the biggest prize of all, coefficient points. We preview those fixtures and remark elsewhere on bad weather for Ducks because they all got broken by Sanchez, Sturridge, Rooney, Kane, and ask what's with all the Premier League rejects tearing up Europe's top leagues. All that plus Championship news and the effect on football of full moons in this Football Weekly. Yeah, lucky us, listeners, as off we go with Barry Glendening.
Hello.
John Ashdown.
Hiya.
And Paul McInnes.
Hey.
Who fancies talking about Spurs Man City, first of all? What a big result that was for Tottenham on Saturday, John Ashdown.
Yeah, it was. It was a bit of a strange game, really. City dominated the first half, and then we're just a bit of a shambles in the second half, really, and Tottenham played on the break and sort of tore them apart. I mean, obviously there was the offside decisions which changed things. But
did it? Do you think it would have had those offside? Because it was what? One for Man City and two for Spurs. One benefiting Man City, two benefiting Spurs.
Yeah, I mean, well, it's kind of, you never really know how these things can sort of alter the mindset and stuff, do you?
Sure. I mean, Pellegrini, who's always very classy in this manner, was careful not to point linesman as the contributing factor for his team's latest mishap. So if it wasn't linesman, what was the difference?
Well, I think they missed Kompany and Mangala in the centre of defence, but I think more than that, they missed sort of Touré midfield when he went off injured.
Right.
You know, that midfield three just didn't give the back four enough protection. Obviously, Hart not being there. And the fact that you know, City have got a couple of injuries, you know, seems to have, considering the money they've got, you know, it's only two or three. It's only sort of Silver, Boney and Delf that are out.
Right, and as you mentioned, Hart going out with the kind of suspect back issue seemed to have a big impact because Camilleri
had
all over the shop.
Had a bad game. I mean,
did pull out the whole centre of their defensive unit there, Mangala, Kompany and Hart, who've been keeping the clean sheets. None of them were available. And I think that seemed to play on it. Even before they conceded their first goal, there seemed to be a lack of communication.
Right, but right now Spurs fans are waggling their fists at us and saying, yeah, but most of all, they played an in-form Tottenham Hotspur with Harry Kane back on the score sheet, with Eric Lamella putting in a performance, and I quote here, marked by nice touches, driving runs and even a handful of tackles. He set up the second goal, won the free kick for the third, scored the fourth and departed to a standing ovation. Eric Lamella, Barry.
It's been a long time coming, that performance, but he's finally shown what he can do for Spurs, and long may it continue, and it will be expected to continue from now on. I think he was, in a sense, assisted by the ramshackle Manchester City defending, insofar as I don't know whether it was Willy Caballero was making the two lads in front of him nervous or the two lads in front of him were making him nervous, but there was a lot of nerves there, and maybe they all just had bad days at the office. Nicolas Otamendi wasn't that convincing, but Lamella was absolutely superb.
And who was great was Eric Dier, who has, you know, changed position at the beginning of the season, now playing in the sort of the base of the midfield. He scored a cracking goal, which was the most egregious offside goal, but really, actually, City had reclaimed possession after the offside, and Kevin De Bruyne just passed it straight to Dier, who hit it clear and true from outside the box. But he's, you know, he appears to be, for somebody who's, what, 22 years old, he seems to be very mature and positionally very astute.
He keeps getting mentioned in dispatches after Spurs games, actually, Eric Dier.
Him and Dele Alli.
I mean, they used to talk about Dier performances for Spurs in a different sense, but now, no, I wasn't actually being funny, but now he's often cropping up. Spurs now in fifth place, only 4 points off the top of the table.
Or is this just this year's version of that massive win they had against Chelsea midway through last season that seemed to promise great things to come, but actually was a momentary blip?
We don't know, do we? But it does strike me that I'd already kind of reconciled myself to writing off loads of Champions League hopefuls, Liverpool being one of them, Spurs being another. And then you look at the table and you're reminded not only are we only 7 games in, but there is only 5 points between top and eighth. So there's still time to come good.
Wow. All right. Well, for City, their next game in the Premier League will be against Newcastle, and we're going to be talking about them very shortly. But before that, in the Champions League, they travel to Mönchengladbach to take on Borussia of that
resurgent Mönchengladbach.
Yeah, absolutely. Extraordinary story. I mean, a fortnight ago, this would have seemed an absolute no-brainer. City were absolutely flying, not conceding, etc. And then things are just... wheels have begun to come off there, while Mönchengladbach, who'd lost all their matches in every competition they'd taken part in, pretty much.
They'd lost 6 in a row, and now they've won
two in a row. Yeah.
Under caretaker manager, André Schubert. Yeah. A man I must confess I know nothing about.
Well, he's not a manager by trade, although I think he's been working with the under-23s. This is all gleaned off Raphael Honigstein. But if they were expecting a Schubert dip, they've had quite the opposite, because he's had 2 straight wins.
Yeah, he's no Schubert lemon.
Very nice, John, very nice. Well, this will be an emotional occasion for the German side, who will be hosting their first European Cup / Champions League fixture since 1978. Absolutely.
I mean, this actually might be quite good for City, though. I mean, I think Sanya was in the press after the game saying that, you know, they've had a problem with maybe becoming a little bit arrogant. And I think the thing about the Juve game last time around was everybody was saying that this is Juve. It's lost all their best players. They're in bad league form. This is, you know, this is a gimme home 3-pointer. Maybe what City need is to be told that they're out of form and the team they're playing is resurgent.
Interesting point, Paul. Here's a potential casualty list for that game. Yaya Touré, his hamstring injury is being assessed. Kompany is likely to miss the game. Mangala, he's out. Clichy back in 2 weeks. Silva may return on Wednesday. Delph's not there. Hart, they say, probably will play. Boney, not so much of an issue, but timeout is unclear. And Iñacho will be back on Saturday. It's a big injury list. And as you say, John, all of a sudden, that squad doesn't look anything like as special.
Well, it's strange, isn't it? And sort of Aguero, you can sort of tell, isn't quite 100% fit, I don't think, either. Yeah, looking at sort of the two benches on Saturday, I mean, obviously bench strength is one of those sort of kind of hoary old cliches that people used to sort of talk about. But yeah, Tottenham had a stronger bench, and the players that they brought on, sort of Chadley, I thought, you know, did quite well, and G, when he came on, played quite well. You know, it makes a difference if you have a couple of knocks and you've got players that can come in and play those roles. And City, yeah, it looks a little bit thin. And if, you know, it's not, there are a few injuries to obviously key players there, and that's like an entire spine, really. But it's not epic. It's not sort of, you know, compared to some of the injury lists we've seen over the years. So, yeah, strange one.
All right. Well, Gladbach lost their opening group game 3-0 away at Sevilla, who will be taking on Juventus, who've had 1 or 2 issues of their own. We'll talk more about that later on. Don't you worry, Barry. But Man City, meanwhile, losing their place at the top of the Premier League to their neighbours Man United. So that's nice. At least it's staying in Manchester. Some consolation there. Man United, who had a fine victory over Sunderland, Barry.
Any victory over Sunderland's a fine victory, yes. 3-0, Wayne Rooney back in the goals. It's like a Betty Ford clinic for, you know, slightly underperforming players of football teams.
Right.
Take on Sunderland. But yeah, it was completely straightforward, much as you would have expected. And it would have been a massive shock in, admittedly, a season of quite a few massive shocks if Sunderland had done anything other than lose that game emphatically.
Well, dear old Ian McIntosh did his best to give Sunderland a chance by saying there was no way that they would win.
They're too powerful for even his mysticism and his hex.
Man United go top for the first time in 2.5 years. Reports that the Black Cats are now looking to bring in Patrick Vieira or, less exotically, Sean Dyche as Dick Advocaat's replacement.
Yeah, I always thought if Advocaat departs, and I was expecting him to resign last week, to be honest, because he just looked so fed up with life on Wearside. And probably going home every day to his wife, going, yeah, nya, 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 I told you so, which can't be nice. And I always presumed it would be Sam Allardyce, who's sort of let it be known that he's at a loose end who would take over the gig. He'd probably keep them up too, but I still wouldn't particularly fancy him as manager. But Dyche or Vieira would certainly keep things interesting.
Certainly would.
But I mean, the players there are so awful. It would test the mettle of even.
This is the point it's getting to now, isn't it? That where you just kind of think, if you were a manager who had a half decent CV, surely the risks outweigh the potential rewards of going to Sunderland.
The potential rewards of being a Premier League manager pretty immense.
Yeah, but you could potentially be a Premier League manager 6 months down the line at another club when the sacking inevitably occurs, whereas you've just got this ingrained culture of booziness and an underachievement and
really
and lack of discipline.
I think any manager who isn't desperate, and I'm sure neither Vieira nor Dyche are desperate for a job, would need certainly to do their due diligence and sort of go, well, what is wrong there? Why are all these people failing? Mm. And it's probably not going to be too difficult to find out. I mean, you hear stories coming out of Sunderland that they're all on the
ketchup,
big beer monsters, and love ketchup on their chips they shouldn't be eating, of course.
Right.
But
are they genuine? Are those genuine stories? Because it's become a bit of Sunderland. That's the story that they tell.
Well, according to the Secret Footballer, there is a massive drinking culture at the club. He tends to get most things pretty on the ball. And I've heard that from other people as well. So,
having a manager with a name like Advocat is surely not going to help that.
I don't think Advocat is probably the tipple of choice among the players. But
Still, though, Man United New Zealand... That's a listener. It says, do the pod think United will still be top of the table after the next three games? I'm not sure which the next three are, but I know...
Well, they're away from home throughout October, and they've got a Manchester derby. That's their
Arsenal,
home game.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, so you've got away games, Arsenal, Everton and Palace, and Man City at Old Trafford.
Yeah.
Well, in my sort of league table that we had to submit at the start of the season to Football Ed's Marcus Christiansen, I had Manchester United at the top at the end of the season, and I still think that's possible.
That run of fixtures, so Arsenal away, Everton away, City at home, and then even Palace away at the end of October, you'll know a little bit more than you will having beaten Sunderland at home. Sunderland team would finish outside the playoffs in the Championship, I think, at the moment.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, Man United are hosting Wolfsburg this midweek. Wolfsburg, who had been doing really well until about 5 days ago when they ran into a fella called Robert Lewandowski, and he put five past them in 9 minutes, and is so often the case, but after heavy defeats with against Bayern Munich, it really shakes your confidence.
Psychological hangover.
Yeah, they only drew this weekend 1-1 with Hannover, although Bas Dost, top Dutch goal threat, was back on the score sheet. That'd be interesting, that one. Interesting.
Yeah, maybe United will just bore them into submission.
Don't know. Anyway, Sunderland going very much bottom of the pile, while their neighbours and top friends Newcastle haven't exactly escaped the bottom three yet. But my word, what a different look to the Magpies Saturday in the late game as they took on Chelsea. I'm the only one who saw this game. I was on rugby duty,
I'm afraid.
All right, okay. What a different look to the Magpies as they took on Chelsea on Saturday afternoon.
Yeah, I mean, there was a couple of debutants in there. There was a return for Mitrovic up front.
Well, that was the thing. Mitrovic coming back, and it was a Mitrovic transformed. No longer was he that kind of hot-headed, crazed loon hacking away and taking early baths and stuff. Instead, he was there whipping up the team. The entire side seemed to be, I was going to say on something, but you know what I mean. I mean, they were possessed. They're playing like men possessed.
It's almost like the champions were coming to play at their ground, and maybe they thought they could prove how good they were by playing well against them.
Yeah, possibly. But they put in an absolutely terrific performance. Why?
If they were just garbage, like say Sunderland are, you could understand them, but why they've been so poor in recent performances. But they've clearly shown they can play.
Right.
Why haven't they been playing like that so far? Because
Mitrovic,
their performances to date have been awful.
Mitrovic coming back into the side, he was missing the last three games, in this kind of form, has a massive effect on the team. Jan Matt had a terrific game. But I think the other thing was that they were well up for it, and Chelsea clearly weren't. I mean, it's been described as a very lazy performance. I think Mourinho gave it a -1 out of 10. But they looked absolutely not bothered to be there.
Yeah, I saw the first half. Like highlights on Match of the Day. And, you know, the crowd were well up for it, proving that all they want to see is a team putting in an effort.
Well, that was the thing about it. And that's, I think, what made it such a dramatic game to watch. I wasn't at the stadium, which was must have been kind of almost, you know, hairs up on the back of your neck type thing, because they actually didn't start off very happy at all. There was a lot of grumbling and, you know, the unrest that there's been with Newcastle fans. And then one or two bits of Chelsea play acting early on started to get the noise building. And then the level of the Newcastle performance, and then when they scored, the place just went mad. And after that, it was like a crescendo of kind of mutual emotion. And oh, it was Sterling. Of course, in the end, they almost lost the game. But but the 2-2 draw, and whether this is something they'll build on or whether, as Steve McLaren...
have to harness, isn't it?
They have to harness.
They have to try and get that spirit in the ground as often as possible. And I know that Mitrovic was kind of conducting the crowd, and McLaren was talking about it afterwards. But at the same time, I don't know that you can rely on that. You've got to be delivering the performances in order to get the atmosphere right.
After all, Newcastle do this every year, don't they? I mean, they've actually beaten Chelsea the last three seasons at St James's. So again, does it mean anything? I don't know. I don't know. But Chelsea's problems clearly weren't solved by that 2-0 win over Arsenal, John, and they've got a trip to Porto next. That's not going to be easy.
No, it won't be. And it's strange, isn't it? Because you keep expecting, you know, players like Ivanovic to sort of snap out of it and, you know, get back to where they were or where they have been for a few seasons. And yeah, it's just not happening. Defensively, the two Newcastle goals from a Chelsea perspective were bad goals to give away. And
although pretty special from Perez's point of view.
It was a lovely finish, but I mean, you know, he had... to Zuma to allow the ball to drop over him like that, and Ivanovic not really to... Well, obviously, he's not expecting Zuma to miss it. Yeah, it's weird that it hasn't clicked for Chelsea yet.
In a way, it's not that dissimilar from how Manchester City were playing this time last year. And, you know, the same problems, I think, of psyching yourself up to go again for a title you've just won. It's probably... And I think particularly for players like Ivanovic and senior players who've been on the run with Chelsea for a long time now.
I wonder as well if the absence of Diego Costa just took a little bit away from the side's steeliness and what bite, you know?
Yeah, well, for sure. I mean, he certainly puts the jitters up defenders, doesn't he? And he also allowed them to play a different way because, you know, for all his ability, Loic Remy can't hold up play like Costa can.
All right. Porto, of course, it's a return home for Jose Mourinho, who in years gone by won the Champions League there. But it'll also be an exciting reunion with his former chum at Real Madrid, Iker Casillas.
Indeed. It would be nice to think Casillas will be going out, I'd imagine, with a point proven. Who's to say he won't put in one of those performances where the goalkeeper just turns into an octopus and lets nothing past him whatsoever. But should be a very interesting game.
All right. Oh, Falcao used to play there as well. Back when he was, you know, really Falcao. 41 goals he scored in 51 appearances for Porto. But he probably won't play because Costa's back available for this. So, there you go. Do you think they're going to get through this unscathed, Chelsea, John? They drew 2-2 with second from bottom Moreirense on Friday to Porto. But they are top of the table, kind of level with Sporting.
Yep.
Yeah, absolutely. That's the beauty of Champions League football. No way of knowing.
Well, I mean, those Porto and Chelsea should be the top two, you'd imagine, come the end of the group. So it's a win there would be a bit of a bonus for Chelsea. It's your archetypal difficult place to go, isn't it?
It certainly is.
Would an actual octopus make a particularly good goalkeeper?
No.
No.
Why not?
Well, they're quite small, aren't they, for a start?
Well, they can grow quite large, and I have a feeling we're embarking on a
Well, it would
on,
just
a lengthy
flop around on the well, line, like it's not going to reach
well,
up. And
you have to be a sentient, you have to, I think an octopus that knows it's a goal.
You'd have to have quite a significantly flooded pitch for it really to be effective. But in those circumstances,
even then, I think if you had it in a tank, sort of a kind of permeable tank, which the ball could go through, so it could try and save it. Even then, I don't think its brain is big enough to process.
Octopuses and squids are famously brainy creatures.
Well, amongst aquatic creatures, but we're talking. Well,
yeah, but how much intelligence does it take to stop a projectile from, you know, entering a specific area of?
If they were both sort of aware of what they were supposed to be doing,
right,
and suitably gloved
up, the laws of the game. Okay,
would an octopus, you pick an octopus, say, ahead of the elephant god Vishnu with
What? If you're allowed gods, that's
I think that's a different paradigm. Yeah. If you want to confine it to the animal kingdom, am I right in thinking that there was a Disney film, Animal Olympics, that displayed the kind of the goalkeeping prowess of the orangutan in particularly favourable light?
Yeah, that's...
Oh, no, sorry. Is it Bedknobs and Broomsticks, says producer Ben, who's recently had kids.
Yeah. Did the orangutan hang from the crossbar?
Very much so. Mm-hmm. It would be a poor show from the director if he hadn't.
Yeah.
But you probably want a spider monkey or something that could actually use its tail from the crossbar and then could use its hands to save.
And this is just me, or a whale.
Or
score just, past that.
Just stick it in there.
Yeah.
You'd have to have...
Are we still going?
You need one of your defenders to be continually throwing buckets of water over it so it didn't die mid-match.
I think they could last 90 minutes.
Yeah. And actually, if it dies mid-match, what's the problem?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. All right, then.
If you're outside the transfer window, though, you wouldn't be able to bring in another
whale.
Yeah.
But they have emergency whale goalkeeping, so you'd be all right.
Okay. Listeners, let's go for a quick break and then come back with part two.
I'm Sandy Waugh. Join me, Andy Bull, Andy Zaltzman and other rugby experts for the latest episode of the Rugby World Cup 2015 podcast, where we'll be discussing Wales' amazing victory over England and all the rest of the action from the last 7 days of the tournament. You can find us on iTunes and The Guardian sports website and acast.com/rugbyworldcup.
Arsenal, also on Champions League duty this midweek. They are going to be taking on Olympiacos. Arsenal, as we mentioned at the top, just 3 points off the top now. This after a thumping 5-2 win at Leicester. Boom.
Yeah, Alexis Sanchez back amongst the goals, scored a hat-trick. I thought Theo Walcott played very well in his role as striker. I had originally thought that, you know, Arsenal had a ready-made striker there in him, and then his performances suggested otherwise. But against Leicester, he was really good. Ran the channels very well, got his goal with a nice finish, and I wouldn't give up hope yet of them making him into a decent striker, although many people do scoff and ridicule me for that, among other things.
The way he took that, not just the finish, but the way he kind of took on Sanchez's ball and opened his body and kind of got round the defender at the same time was pretty classy.
It was Martial-esque.
It was, it was, and it was instinctual, and that's, it looks instinctual. I'm sure it's very well.
He clearly believes he has what it takes to be a specialist striker. And what... Would he campaign and bang the drum as vociferously and loudly if he had any doubts whatsoever? Because he's sort of only going to make himself look a bit of a chump if it turns out that he doesn't have what it takes.
Yeah, and players have got to believe in themselves to get better as well. And I think on the King Power, you know, you could look at Jamie Vardy and say, well, that is exactly what's possible. This guy was playing non-league. He took both goals, but particularly the first goal. He took it excellently. And he's a great finisher, he's got great pace and he's got physicality and he seems to be channeling those three assets very effectively in the Premier League. So, you know, that bit where Walcott bounced Huth off of him in order to kind of get into the box, you know, that's a sign of strength, which I don't think you would have associated with Walcott a few seasons ago.
Absolutely. Well, he have the chance perhaps to do more of that kind of thing against the Greeks, who lost 3-0 in their opener at home to Bayern Munich, because Giroud is suspended after his red card shame away in Zagreb. Another game that everyone thought Arsenal were going to have a terrific time in and went very, very, very badly wrong.
Yeah, but this is that Walcott's better, or is more naturally suited to playing striker away from home, isn't he, when he's got
on
space to run into.
Right.
It's hard to see it past Arsenal for that one, because they've been in the same group as each other four times in seven seasons. Arsenal have won...
Is that right?
...each game at the Emirates. And in their last 12 visits to these shores, Olympiacos have lost every single time on 37-3 on aggregate.
Really? But that was before they signed Cambiasso. Also in that group, Barry, are Zagreb and Bayern Munich. Tell us something about that game.
Well, Dynamo Zagreb are now 45 unbeaten. And
45 games in a row?
Yeah, unbeaten. Wow. And that record will be very much tested when they go to Bayern Munich midweek.
Right, Bayern Munich, who are off to what statisticians say is the best ever start to a German top-flight campaign ever.
Wow.
Ever. The only team with a perfect record in any of Europe's top five divisions. Bayern Munich. We'll talk more about foreign things later. Let's just deal with other bits of Premier League business, John. Don't know if you were across Liverpool's dramatic 3-2 victory over Aston Villa, featuring the return of the Sturridge.
Yeah, and he looked good. Well, I say he looked good. You know, he didn't have a great game outside of the goals.
But he scored goals, and that's what he's paid to do.
Were good, yeah. I mean, the first one was probably technically better, but the second one, when Villa were kind of getting a bit of momentum and he was just very, very clinical in sticking it away, that was almost more impressive, kind of, in a sense. And yeah, obviously they've missed him, but you can't... There's no expectation of him, you know, being able to play 30 games this season, really.
Because you think he's just too injury prone,
yeah.
Right. What you see instantly when he comes back into the team is that interchange, that quick forward interchange, which you associated with the strong Liverpool side. That second goal, the little back heel from Coutinho to him. You know that he's got the striking prowess, but he's also got that flexibility and the smarts to move around.
Kim Jiankong asks, "What his return portends?" Nice word for Benteke.
Well, I think that's it. I think it's an interesting question because, you know, I love Benteke and he is obviously a top-tier Premier League striker. But he for just simply by dint of his size, he is not somebody who can be as mobile as the rest of the forwards. And now you've got Ings in there as well, who appears to be on that wavelength. You kind of think, well, actually, if they have him and Sturridge and Coutinho playing in that sort of false three, could the
false three?
Well, you know, they don't really have a kind of main striker. It's like when they had Suarez. So Suarez was nominally the number nine, but they would all kind of interchange. If you get that going again, that obviously fits better with Rodgers' worldview.
Right.
And then where does that, you know, do you break that up by bringing in Benteke again?
Speaking of Rodgers' worldview, I was excited to see
him. Worldview was a bit over the top, wasn't it? Sorry.
Dominated. No, that's exactly right. But anyway, dominated by the global frenzy. To get him out of Anfield. Anyway, I didn't attend the meeting this morning, Barry, but any news?
Well, I was there. There was, the insignia, the eye atop a pyramid, and we all stood around in cowls plotting what we were going to do next to undermine Brendan. He's sort of veering perilously towards but Dan Brown territory, talking about conspiracies and people wanting him out, and at some point a lever of power will be pulled which will send him, you know, release a trapdoor and send him sliding down into a pit containing the remains of Marilyn Monroe and Shergar and Abraham Lincoln.
Wow.
I think it's very exciting. Stay tuned.
On a rather more mundane
level. You can come, by the way. I just have to nominate you.
Okay,
and,
cool.
And I get a seconder.
So. Right.
You just get numbers assigned. So you're number three. If you come in later, Jimbo would be sort of subservient to you.
It's like a... Well, it is a pyramid scheme.
In a very literal sense.
On top, yeah. Saints beat Swansea. Look at Southampton. They're back, aren't they? Was that 3-1?
Yeah. Virgil van Dijk's very handsome. It's a conclusion I've come to.
All right.
Scored a nice little goal. They're looking at, looking solid again since he's arrived.
Yeah, I've never been convinced by Virgil van Dijk because I've only really seen him...
Never had an opinion on him, to be fair.
Well, I've seen him play for Celtic in European games, basically, and he's never, ever impressed me at all. And I thought he was awful in their two games against Malmo, but I've been assured he is a very good player. But I sort of took that as he's a very good player if he's playing against East Fife or...
I think he just fancies himself.
Inverness. But,
which he's entitled to do, given his looks.
He is a handsome man, all right. But no, good luck to him. It'll be interesting to see how he gets on, but he's got off to a good start.
Anyway, Palace, Watford, they've gone up to 6. Oh, is Alex Neil the next Paul Lambert, says Aidan Wiley?
We play a different football.
Yes.
It's kind of...
No, he's not. He's better, isn't he?
I think he could be. He does have we were talking about this after the weekend where we were very disappointed to chuck it away in the last 30 seconds of the game.
Oh, is that what happened?
Yeah, we were, I think, marginally the better side throughout the game. Although
this was at West Ham.
Yeah, both teams had their patches of dominance, but we had the better chances pretty much, and we had more possession. And we went 2-1 up with 7 minutes to go, and then with 30 seconds to go of added time, we did the sort of... Championship naive defending, knocked over Winston Reid. They smacked a ball into the box, and I think what happened, my reading of it, I've watched it a lot of times, John Ruddy was just scared of Andy Carroll. So what you can do with Andy Carroll is you can bring on £35 million worth of just terror.
It's like that whale in goal, basically.
It is, very much. He's the human equivalent of a whale in goal up front.
Right.
And he kind of made Ruddy, who should have come out and just catch the ball, think, oh, I'm going to get out of the way and try and punch it, and he didn't punch it very well. They equalised. But anyway, Alex Neil has a better squad than Paul Lambert ever had.
Oh.
So I think on that side. But the football we play is really attractive.
All right. And also, a nice humanitarian touch there from Johnny Houston, rescuing a stricken pigeon.
Yeah.
The pigeon had got, what, kicked in the course of that game?
Yeah, he got
so he picked
concussed.
It up.
Yeah, and afterwards, Alex Neil was asked about it, and he said the reason why was that Johnny's a good Yorkshire lad who loves his animals.
Right. Did he wash his hands afterwards? Because they're filthy, disease-carrying vermin in many
the
ways.
The rats
pigeons.
Of the sky.
I fully expect Johnny Houston to be ruled out now with Wheels disease or ticks.
Mm.
And did we ever, Max and I were trying to establish yesterday on the radio whether or not the pigeon had lived or died, because on Match
as
of the Day
as long as
it
wasn't allowed back on field, that's the main thing.
They said he lived on Match of the Day, but
oh, really?
I've heard rumours to the contrary.
I wonder how they'd quite be able to substantiate that.
To establish that, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, might have one of those little tags on the...
Yeah. It'd be really nice if West Ham had a kind of pigeon preservation concern where they tagged all their pigeons.
Right. Well, we should finish off our Premier League roundup with unhappy news for Bournemouth, who got beaten at Stoke, and they've lost another striker with the ligament.
Is it
yeah, it is.
It's out for the season, according to the lads
downstairs.
So this
is Callum Wilson, who'd had 5 goals so far this season.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and Mings is already out. Gradle's out.
Yeah. No, I think that's a really bad blow for them.
Who have they got? Glenn Murray?
Yeah.
Kermagant.
But they're different kinds of players to what Wilson brings. And he's quick and powerful, and he's the sort of player that could score enough goals to keep them up. And, yeah, to lose him in addition to, you know, your record signing in Tyrone Mings. Yeah, it's not good.
I mean,
there's an interesting theory going around downstairs on the football desk.
Oh, yeah.
The Jacob Steinberg final destination curse.
Oh.
Because Jacob
survived. He escaped the burning plane, yeah.
A potential aviation disaster. Then he went and interviewed Callum Wilson. And now Callum Wilson is out for the season.
So you've got one person so far on this chain of...
Well, it's a start.
Yeah. All right. He's due in the pod on Thursday. I have to say, that's not good news.
Right, well...
Right. Sorry, John.
No, I was just going to... Because that wasn't really how Final Destination worked, though, was it?
Oh, I've not seen the film.
No. Well, if you didn't... The plane crashed, and then... Wasn't it, like, anybody
I've
who didn't...
I've seen it, but it was a long time ago.
Yeah,
the Reaper just keeps coming after you.
Yeah.
Because you cheated death.
You cheated death.
Yeah.
So he... But you can't cheat death.
Well, no.
Right.
I don't know. It's a long time since I saw it, so...
Is it more the Medusa touch, something like that?
Or
would that
it,
be more?
It follows another horror movie of the last 6 months where you passed on the curse of death onto somebody else.
Oh, wow.
Except in It Follows, the only way you can pass it on is through sexual intercourse.
Wow. I can only assume that wasn't relevant in this case particularly.
Well,
Paul,
we don't. I mean,
is that a film you'd recommend, It Follows?
Yes, very much so. It's a bit sort of indie, but it is.
Yeah
but it's spooky enough, all right.
Spooky. All right. A Championship Minute, that's up next after this. Hey, Barry, have you heard the one about the Englishman, the Irishman and the Scotsman who walked into the Brighton Dome Concert Hall?
No.
Right. Well, you will on the 16th of October, because that's when you, me, Paul McInnes... Are you Scottish, Paul?
I am indeed.
All right. And also Ian McIntosh, who may be Scottish as well. You'd have to think at some point. Anyway, we'll all be on stage at the Brighton Comedy Festival. That's Friday the 16th of October at 8 p.m.
Spinning bow ties at the ready.
Yeah. You can get tickets and any other info you want about this at theguardian.com/Guardian Live. That's all one word. That's going to be quite a night. Stags and Hindus welcome.
Why are you particularly welcoming Hindus but not other religions?
No, Barry, I said Hindus.
Oh, sorry.
I see
that's comedy. That's why we're going to a comedy festival.
Ben, can you snip that bit out so we can use it on the night? Okay. Hey, speaking of Brighton, they're top of the Championship, John. It's your Championship Minute.
Yeah, they're top. They had a bit of a disappointing result on Saturday, though. They were 2-0 up at Bolton, only to draw 2-2. But themselves and Middlesbrough, who won 3-0 against Leeds.
Surely that's 7 wins in a row. Well,
it's 5 in the league.
Right, it's 7 in a row.
7 in total.
And 5 in the league, yeah.
Looking like the two outstanding teams at the moment.
Mm.
The big news sort of this Monday morning was at Brentford, where Marinus Dijkhuizen has been given his P45 after only just 8 games of the season.
Right. Just to recap here, they did brilliantly last season under Mark Warburton, reached the playoffs, despite the fact that he already knew he was going to be given the boot at the end of the season. Because they wanted to bring in a more analytics type approach, like they were using at Midtjylland, yes?
Yeah, so they in February they announced that Warburton would be leaving at the end of the season. And because they have this data-driven kind of recruitment policy, they wanted a head coach to work underneath director of football. And in the summer, what they ended up doing was bringing in an extra director of football. So they have two co-directors of football and a head of football operations.
Ooh.
All working kind of above the
What do they do? How does that work?
Well, they're the ones that decide, you know, essentially who gets brought in and who departs, and the head coach is the man that coaches them.
Right.
And so their policy this summer was to basically lose 4 key first-teamers that had done really well for them last season.
Mm.
Andre Gray to Burnley for £9 million being the only sort of really understandable one, because £9 million quid for a championship striker is big money. The players they've brought in have been sort of European kind of, from Admira Wacker, and that's probably not how you pronounce it, but Kaiserslautern and Gothenburg, places like that.
Right.
They've had a few injuries, and it's just not worked.
Well, I've seen Moneyball, and I know this is exactly the point of the film, that he goes to see the owner of the A's, and he says, listen, you have to stand by me, and he does, and then it's all brilliant, and they go on that amazing, I won't spoil it, it's a great film. So that's clearly what Matthew Benham's got wrong here. He should have stuck with them.
Perhaps, yeah. Perhaps.
But would the co-directors of football, would they be deciding on the style of play and the shape of the team?
That's hard to tell, isn't it, really? I mean, you'd imagine that they'd have to have some sort of input, because they're bringing players with something in mind. You can't just bring players literally, you know, due to paper numbers. Rasmus Ankersen, who's one of the two co-directors, has got a couple of books. He's chairman at Midtjylland. And his latest book is Hunger in Paradise, brackets, beat the hell out of complacency. So
all
maybe
right.
They were just terrified of complacency and have kicked on in this particular way.
I think now they've promoted Lee Carsley from within.
Oh.
So he's mates with Kevin Kilbane. So I texted Kevin Kilbane to see what kind of coach he'd be.
Right.
So he said he's very good. He knows the system at Brentford, such as it is. And he had just started working with Eddie Boothroyd, apparently, with the England under-19s, but we'll probably have to jack that in now. And he's got experience working as a coach with Coventry as well. So,
right.
But he was in charge of the Brentford development squad.
It was a fascinating story. Brentford find themselves down in 19th place, which is why they've decided to ditch all of that, thanks. Mark Warburton, their erstwhile coach, now at Rangers, where, oh my word, he's had 8 wins in a row, and their goal difference is plus 24. Mind you, it is Rangers in the Scottish First Division, so Scottish Championship. Anyway.
Didn't do so well last season, you know.
That's a fair point. Hey, speaking of Rangers and things north of the border, Barry, what's up in your fit bar corner?
Okay, well, Aberdeen. Lost again.
No!
Yes. Is that 2 they've lost now since we featured them?
Yeah, and Jacob was in that pod as well, I think. So.
We spoke about their winning run.
Right.
They lost 2-1 against Inverness, at Inverness.
How's the gap with Celtic?
They're 4 points clear of Celtic still.
Mm.
Celtic drew 0-0 with Hearts at home. And afterwards, a nice little touch from Craig Gordon, their goalkeeper, who had a game, went in goals in an impromptu game played by some kids out in the concourse of the stadium afterwards, which was a big thrill for them, I'd imagine.
Did he let them score a few, or was it one of those really boring ones where he kind of celebrated every save?
I reckon
like
he was probably trying really hard, yeah. You would, though, wouldn't you?
Yeah,
you have to let kids earn their little victories.
Yeah.
Dundee United have sacked Jackie McNamara.
Oh.
He was there, I think, nearly 3 years. They lost 2-1 to St Johnstone, and Miksu Patalainen, club legend, and Stuart McCall are apparently the front runners. One of them will probably take over. Dundee United chairman Steve Thompson has been getting a lot of stick. He's been accused of putting finance first at the club. I think he famously sold a couple of their best players to Celtic shortly before the League Cup final last season. Yeah. That didn't go down too well with... And he also had a clause in Jackie McNamara's contract, which meant that any players that were sold on at a profit, Jackie McNamara got a cut, which seems a very extraordinary arrangement to have with a manager because, and I'm not suggesting Jackie McNamara had anything but best, club's best interests at heart, but, you know, you're being incentivised to fail, basically, aren't you?
Absolutely.
I like that idea of finance first. I might take that as my motto.
Finance first.
Yeah. In life, finance first.
Finance first. That's fascinating, Barry. Thank you so much for that update. All sorts of other exciting things going on around Europe, Paul McInnes. You're just having a stretch, weren't you?
It sits up to attention. Yeah, right. I've tucked in my T-shirt so you can't see
it. What do you want to hear
anymore.
About?
I'd quite like to know about the Italian league.
Oh, you've thrown me a curveball there.
Yeah, because, well, A, because you know a lot about it, and B, because I've been down on it in the past, but actually C, find it, you know, there's quite a few competitive teams in there with
interesting
players.
That's a really exciting... title race developing there because you've got Inter, who had looked like the side that maybe were going to assert their dominance again this year. They had 5 straight wins, only conceding 1 goal. They hosted Fiorentina Sunday night. Bang! 25 minutes in, they were 3-0 down. Oof. And their big kind of midfield trio of dreadnoughts that they've assembled there, Kondogbia.
Yeah, I like Kondogbia.
You like Kondogbia?
Yeah, I like him.
And Felipe Melo and Guarin. Fiorentina were just dancing around them, spraying balls this way, that way, and took them apart. Marcus Alonso, Kalinic, former Blackburn Rovers favourite, Kalinic, scored a hat-trick. And it was a curious thing, actually, Borja Valero, another player who was shining there in the Fiorentina midfield, it completely changed everyone's opinion on Inter. They now look like a lumbering bunch of loons. So Kalinic has, in fact, scored 4 goals with just 8 shots on target this season.
I watched this game. It was, were Inter uncharacteristically bad or just...
I think they haven't been that good. They haven't really played proper teams yet. I mean, people got excited about their derby win over Milan, but Milan actually didn't play badly in that game. And it turns out Milan aren't that good either. Under Sinisa Mihajlovic, they actually have a worse record than they did under Pippo in Inzaghi. But, yes... But the thing is, Fiorentina, and this is exciting, have now gone top of the table.
Oh, that's good.
First time that that has happened since 1999, when it looked like they had Trapattoni as their manager back then, and Batigol up front, and Enrico Chiesa was there, I think, as well. Oh, no, possibly he was after that. No, he wasn't there, because this was the thing. Batigol, they got injured in pretty much the next game, and Edmundo, you remember mad old Edmundo?
Yeah, the beast. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The animal.
Oh, the animal.
Yeah, the animal.
That's a beast.
It is. He was, you know, so that was, he was going to be Batty's replacement, but brilliantly, he'd had written into his contract with Fiorentina that he was allowed a week off to go to the carnival every season. So Batistuta got injured and they said, oh, Edmundo, so you won't be going to the carnival. He went, no, I'm off, see ya. And he just left them there in the lurch.
It's a heroic lack of professionalism.
It really is. Yeah. Anyway, they've had 4 straight wins. Fiorentino, Paolo Sousa, yeah, he's in charge there. It's brilliant. It is curious, though. I mean, Premier League rejects. People are going to say, oh, well, obviously it's very easy over there. But it's remarkable how some players who were never really rated over here, I mentioned Kalinic, Borja Valero, Angel Di Maria, fantastic goal for PSG. Obviously slightly different category of player, but fantastic goal for PSG. Did you see this one?
No, what did he do?
Oh, amazing lob. Of the keeper. He's basically running towards the keeper. The keeper comes out, so he just does this lob. But the lob basically goes... I mean, it pretty much exits the stadium and then comes back down again and bounces into goal.
He's got a great lob for United, didn't he?
Did he?
One of his early goals, I think.
All right.
But yeah, I mean, a lot of these players like Kalinic, you know, they never really get the chance to embed themselves in a team because, you know, he came in, I think when he signed for Rovers, they were on their way down, weren't they? And it was, you know, you've got to... It's like the guy... Kamaric at Leicester right now, you know, comes in for, has a good record in Europe, immediately put in that we need you to score goals this week. 6 weeks doesn't do it, so he's out, somebody else comes in, and then you never get a chance to really develop, and then before you know it, you're flogged off again.
Since you ask about Italy, Paul, obviously Fiorentina top, and then there's the big question, who else is going to be? Because you've got Torino are up there, but are they going to make a title challenge?
No.
Surely not. Surely but there's not. All sorts of teams that you would not expect up there. Chievo have been up there. Roma only... Well, they had a 5-1 win against Carpi. But that was a
Carpi DM.
Indeed. Indeed. But it was an absolutely empty Stadio Olimpico.
Why?
Well, the local police have decided that for public order reasons, they're going to put a big division down the middle of the fabled Curva Sud. And the Roma fans said, we're not having that. We're not turning up to games at all. Fair. And there's suggestions today that Lazio fans may come out in solidarity with their you know, usually loathed neighbours and enemies. And the two sides, indeed, when the derby comes around in November, the two sides which might just not turn up at all.
I think similarly in the northeast, I think there were some Newcastle fans who got behind the Middlesbrough SOS protest about Save Our Steelworks as well.
So, oh, well, that's a
good solidarity
cause we can all get behind, yeah.
It was also
the Corbyn effect.
Francesco Totti's 39th birthday yesterday.
Oh, that's very true. And he picked up an injury, poor chap. Probably out for a couple of months. They've got one or two injury issues, have Roma. Dzeko's out as well as they travel to Bate Borisov in the Champions League. And
do you think Sevilla will beat Juventus?
Well, that's a very good question. I don't know. I got my predictions so wrong previously.
What's the little man inside you saying?
He says they might do, you know.
Yeah.
But they're bottom of the Liga, you know, Sevilla. Or at least they were.
Two teams.
But Juve have got major injury problems. Mandzukic, Morata. And they got beaten this weekend away at Napoli. So every time they've come up against, you know, a decent side, they seem to get beaten, apart from that Man City game. Draw whatever conclusions.
What do you think of Napoli's chances?
Of taking the title?
Yeah.
They've got to be in there. Right. Napoli, Roma. I presume Juve are going to come back at some point, because they are a decent side. And Napoli looking really good under Maurizio Sarri, who Maradona, who carries a little bit of weight in Naples, of course.
And in general.
Had decided just to announce about 10 days ago, Napoli won't win anything with this guy, Maurizio Sarri. So they went and beat Lazio, was it 5-1, I think, at the weekend, last weekend. And then did Juve in the most cherished victory of all, because Juve, the big northern side, and Napoli very much the flowers of the south, as it were. Yeah. Anyway, elsewhere in Europe, listeners, the big news, arguably, this weekend was Leo Messi's injury, which means he's going to be out for, 7 or 8 weeks?
In a way, the extraordinary thing is that it doesn't happen more often to him.
Mm. Well, I'm glad it doesn't, poor chap.
Yeah, absolutely.
All the knocks he takes.
Something similar, you could say the same about Cristiano. I mean, obviously a different frame, but he must get the same amount of kicks. But he got a health award at the weekend for being so healthy. At the same time as Leo goes out getting crocked. Curses.
I wonder, when he was getting that award, was Messi standing in the background pouting? Probably was.
Just looking, sitting in a really bad suit. Yeah.
He's going to be out sore for 2 months. He's going to miss, I think, all their group games, pretty much. And probably the Clasico as well.
Yeah.
And, yeah. Right.
Now that Pedro's gone, who's their backup striker?
Apart from Neymar and Luis Suarez.
Well, they play a three, don't they?
Well, so. El Munir?
Right.
Off the top of my head.
Because they had their Rafinha, didn't they? But he's injured that.
Yeah, he's out for probably the season as well. He broke his knee, didn't he, against Roma in the last one. This time around, they're going to be hosting Bayer Leverkusen, Hoje Schmidt's Bayer Leverkusen, who beat Batty 4-1 in their opening game. Last time, it was the 2012-13 season they played Barcelona, but Barcelona beat them 7-1. But Messi scored 5 of those goals. And he's not playing, John.
No.
It's difficult to feel sorry, I just have to say.
What?
I mean, I feel sorry personally for Leo because he's lovely and his face kind of radiates out of the cover of every EA Sports football game.
Exactly.
But just, they are one of the biggest clubs in the world. They do have unparalleled resources.
No, they don't.
They should be able to, you know, they're already lobbying to get around the ban that has been brought in kind of reluctantly against them breaking of AFFP so they can get Arda Turan in. I'm not crying over this.
Okay. It's my call,
isn't it, onto whether to cry.
I think most
sometimes I cry involuntarily.
Would be very much of the opinion that Messi should always be fit. But
I think like that, James.
All right, well, good for you. Good to get an alternative view. Sid Lowe, by the way, will be speaking to hopefully on Thursday, reacting to all these games and probably also Real Madrid's big trip to Malmö. Tell you what, I mentioned at the start of the show, but haven't in any way readdressed, is the effect of full moons on football.
What about full blood moons?
Oh, well, that's interesting. Were there a lot of red cards this weekend?
Oh, there were a lot of goals, not a lot of red cards. Right. There was 36 goals in the Premier League, 9 games.
Right.
With now, the reason I mentioned from this Everton is to come.
Duncan Alexander of Opta Stats has compiled a list of the red card ratios to games when there's a full moon and when there isn't. And what he turned up is quite extraordinary, John. You'll appreciate this. Ordinarily, you know, during most days in the lunar cycle, you get 0.58 red cards per game, which is actually quite a high figure. When the full moon comes out, that leaps to a staggering 0.66. That's an increase of, what's that, about 15, 16%.
But it's one to infer lycanthropic tendencies amongst Premier League footballers now.
Well, I think the moon, it has an impact, as we all know, on behaviour.
Yeah.
Yeah,
exactly.
Right,
I've seen Teen Wolf.
Exactly.
Does the moon affect Teen Wolf? Because I have a feeling.
Oh, right, okay. I don't necessarily know. I thought I'd pull out a popular cultural reference.
But for example,
there was Wolf Man. Yeah. He certainly was affected by
the exactly,
moon.
Exactly. The one with Benicio del Toro and Anthony Hopkins, which is one of the worst films ever made. Mm. The Wolf Man. That definitely happens.
Mm. I just wonder if Michael J. Fox eats more when he gets angry and emotionally riled.
Yeah, like a lot of adolescents.
Or when he's playing basketball.
Yeah.
Or trying to buy a keg of beer.
Oh, you really have seen this film.
Give me a keg of beer.
Right.
It's what Barry says when he goes into his
On that note, then, that's where we'll come to the end of today's Football Weekly. It's going to be a busy show on Thursday, listeners, so make sure you're back for that when we'll be addressing the fallout from all the various midweek matches, and looking forward to another weekend of fun and games. Thanks in the meantime, Barry, Paul McInnes, John Ashdown, and producer Ben, and have a great week till Thursday.
This Guardian podcast is supported by Squarespace. If you want to build a website, you've got many options. But if you want to build it beautiful, there's only one. Squarespace gives you the power of world-class design so you can do more than create a website. You can set yourself apart. See why some of the world's most influential people, brands and businesses choose Squarespace. To start your free trial, head to squarespace.com/guardian.